part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and my name is Christian Horn, and I'm on the line with my good friend and compatriot Jay Holtham in the fight against evil. And this week we are here to talk about the previous week's CWDC Invasion crossover. Dun dun dun.
Oh my god.
That so nerds, epic. That all nerds everywhere were waiting for.
Wow.
The crossover between Supergirl, The Flash, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow, which I found to be far more entertaining than anything in Batfleck v Superman of Steel.
Oh, yeah. Far and away.
A bajillion more times more pleasant. As a matter of fact, I was kind of wishing like we could have recorded them and like gotten everyone on the Batfleck v Man of Steel podcast and watched this and just done like a 4-hour thing. But, you know, it's the holidays. Oh. You can't get people in the same room during the holidays.
It's hard.
It's hard.
It's much harder.
It's hard.
It would have definitely cleared the bad taste out of everyone's mouth.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So what are some of your initial thoughts? I mean,
my initial thoughts were this was like the most fun that I've had watching anything in a while.
Oh,
like,
really?
It was just
that.
Yeah, it was just pure fun. Like, I am definitely like, I've been all in on at least the three original CW shows.
Yeah.
This was not exactly my first interaction with Supergirl, but my first this season. I haven't actually watched any of the new CW Supergirl.
Okay.
Yeah. Until this, I'm gonna go forward from now, which was also great. That I was like, oh, this is like, as they must have known it because like the it introduced like all of these characters in a really good way. The Supergirl one, and introduced sort of like what's going on in the season. That I feel like I could probably just watch this show from here on, and not really need to go back and not be confused. Okay, yeah, you've established how all of this works, and I'm fine. But I'm so like, I'm on board. So I'm a bit of a homer for these shows. And like, I have a bit of a like big love, and it was just everything that I could have wanted from it. It was super comic booky.
Yeah.
Lots of little great Easter eggs.
Yeah.
But it was also to me like great TV, you know, they like really, cause you know, they've built this whole universe and they built all these things. I really love that, like, in a way, the like emotional story of it really got me, and that it's an emotional story that's really about the Flash,
yeah,
more than anything else. That like the Flash's season sort of arc is the one that moved forward the most,
yeah.
But there was also like, I don't know, it was also Easter eggs for watching the show. Like, it was great to see all those old characters. Just to for anyone who didn't watch,
spoilers. Yeah.
But the backbone of it is that Erase, who I don't remember from the comic books, you probably know more about them if they are super part of the comic book world.
Oh yeah,
the Dominators.
Are. Yeah.
Attack Earth, and the superhero and the Flash pulls together this superhero team. Of all of the superheroes we've seen so far at one point or another to fight, with like one exception. There's only one person missing entirely from this.
Who is missing?
Artemis from Arrow. From the Arrow team didn't show up at all.
Oh, that's right. That's right. The young lady. That's right. Oh, okay.
The new female archer on Arrow didn't show up.
Oh, that's
but they pulled in basically everyone else, all who's currently on the shows. And in the Arrow episode in particular, Arrow, White Canary, Spartan, Diggle, and Thea, Speedy, are all captured and put into like a group hallucination.
Ray. Yeah, yeah.
And Ray, and yeah. Ray Palmer are put into a group hallucination of what it would have been like if the Queen, if Oliver hadn't gotten on the Queen's Gambit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it hadn't gone down. So we got to see like all of these people who haven't been on the show for years. All of these dead characters.
Yeah, that's right.
And got to reinteract with them, and it was great because it felt – part of what I liked about this was that it felt so genuine.
Uh-huh.
That, like, you know, seeing Sarah Lance hugging her sister, like, it felt, one, really, like, oh, that's sweet as characters, and she misses her so much.
Yeah.
And, two, it also felt like, I bet you they miss each other. They all seem to like each other. It was like, oh,
yeah.
Great. I get to see Katie again. I haven't seen her in years.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know, that's interesting because the one thing that I always, you know, my wife doesn't really necessarily watch these shows with me. I like, you know, I harbor time to myself. She'll watch like an episode or two, but she's not like hardcore into them. But it's interesting because the one thing that I notice when I watch these shows, and it's sort of like the feeling I get when I watch Doctor Who, is I get the feeling that these people, like, they're all really having fun. Like, this is sort of like the gig of a lifetime for a lot of them. Like, they're like, this is great. This is like super fun. I show up to work. Like, we're having a blast. We're dressing up in costumes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that is the one thing that I definitely get from all the shows, is that everyone's enthusiastic. Everyone's here to play. There's no, you know, jerks on the set or anything. Like, it seems like they're sort of like an extended family. And you definitely got that feeling on this from episode to episode, like that they're all welcoming to each other, that they're all warm to one another. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It's sort of, it definitely, particularly the Arrow episode, sort of like gave me the feels in kind of like all the right places.
It's
really interesting. It's interesting though that you say like good TV, because there's definitely a part of me that feels like, I mean, in general, I think like I have to admit, like, these shows are a little bit silly. Like, some of them, like, there's definitely some dopey
really
stuff
silly.
That goes on where I'm like, wow.
Oh,
particularly Arrow this season has just been like, wow. To the point where I've definitely watched the show and been like, this show's really kind of dumb, man. Like, you know, but the thing is, again, I just like, I enjoy it for what it is. Like, it's action. And a big part of the reason that I like Arrow, and a big part of the reason that I like all of these shows, are the performers. You know what I mean? Like, there's some sort of like, I don't know, you said like warmth, or, you know, there's some sort of genuine feel that you get off of them, that you feel like these are sort of friends of yours. It's like really weird, or that if you met them in real life, they would be sort of like open to you and kind and warm. You know what I mean? It's a very rare quality that you get from a TV show, where there's just this sort of family feel to it. You know what I mean? And and that is the biggest reason I keep tuning in. Like, no matter how dopey the plot lines get, no matter how stupid somebody does something, or how goofy like the villain or whatever, or how dumb the costume, I'm looking at you, Ragman, you know, you know, the thing is like, it doesn't matter, because it's like, I really get the feeling from these shows of like, what you used to sort of want superheroes to be like when you were 14. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. It definitely has that feeling of like the superhero groups and the times of sort of superhero team ups that I liked the most. And it's, you're exactly right, that it is really in the performers. I mean, it's just great to see Emily Betts Rickard, or Rickard Betts, whatever, working with Carlos Valdez, and they're like having fun and doing work, and they're getting to do all the little jokes. Like, it's always great when Sisko, Carlos Valdez plays Sisko, when he interacts with the other sidekicks, and like in the Arrow episode where he's like, so that guy does movie quotes? And you're like, oh, right.
Yeah, he's like, how original, or something like that. Yeah,
exactly. But they have built this sort of like, they've got a system, and they've got sort of a way of this all working. But it is, it is, the fun that they're having is infectious. And it felt like this was the most fun any of them got to have all season.
Yeah.
And in some ways, like, the best work they got to do. Because I want to single, I mean, he's always great. Victor Garber.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, Victor Garber as Dr. Stein, as Professor Martin Stein, Carlos Valdez as Sisko, to a certain degree, Barry Allen, Grant Gustin's Barry Allen, and surprise hero, because she's normally, I mean, I like her, but she's normally not this strong, but Willa Holland's Thea were the characters who had, yeah, like, the big emotional work to do over the course of these four episodes, and they were all really up to the task. Like, yeah. I've been this season I've actually liked Arrow kind of the most of them.
Really?
As like a show. Yeah, I'm in the other camp. I felt like this season Arrow is like as like tightened down. It makes more sense. It's a little sillier that he's somehow managing to be mayor.
Yeah.
That stretches credibility, but I like the new team and I like their issues and how it feels tighter and more concise than last season.
You know, that's interesting that you say that about Arrow, because to me, Arrow is absolutely 100% the Batman stand-in. And I feel like this season has been, I mean, maybe the other one where they were dealing with the League of Assassins, but I feel like this season has been the sort of doubling down on the Batman thing. Like, I'm a hard ass. You don't disobey me. Whatever if you don't do what I want, you're out. You know, that sort of like hard ass Batman. And that's never been a Batman that I've been particularly liked or interested in. And so for this four part like crossover, this was a chance to see Oliver, because I really like what's the character's name, the actor's name who plays Oliver. It's I'm blanking out. Stephen Amell. Yeah, Stephen Amell. It's interesting because when I first started watching, I did not like the first season of Arrow. I thought it was dopey. It was too Smallville. And then the second half like really picked up because my friend Paul, who isn't on this episode with us, he was like, you got to keep watching. And I think that Stephen Amell has this really great charisma. And when they let him be warm and open and stuff like that, it's so great to sort of like join him in that. And in this four-parter, like, he had that opportunity, like, the moment where he sticks up for Barry, because it's so out of character with the way Arrow has been acting this season, where it's like, no, you must listen to me. But, like, in that, you know, Flash episode where they're all like, we're just going to go off, and we don't trust you because of this recording that we got from the future, and you messed with the timeline, you know, for anyone not knowing, the whole reason that the invasion gets kicked off is because the aliens detect that Barry Allen has gone back in the time stream, and now they see the Earth as sort of like a threat because we've got heroes that can go back and manipulate time, and they see that as too much of a threat. But anyway, a bunch of the heroes decide they're going to go off and fight the aliens. They don't trust Barry, and Arrow's like, wait, guys, this is crazy. Like, this is like insane. Yeah. Like, if Barry doesn't go, I don't go. And then they're like, I guess you're not going either. And it was the most warmth that I've seen come off of Oliver in like so long. And I was like, I've been waiting for this, because you're so good at that. Like, he's good at being the hard ass. He can fight. He can do the pull-ups on the thing where he jumps up and whatever they're called. The salmon ladder, which is like heartbreaking to anybody who tries to do any kind of exercise.
My God.
You know,
so awful.
But it's just like, you know, that to me was like one of my favorite things was like how Oliver kind of like shined through and became sort of like a more sensitive character. And you're right, in that Arrow episode, you saw sort of that crusty Grinch heart that he's been developing for the past last, you know, season or season and a half, you know, sort of melt a little bit. And I wish they would do more of that on his actual show, because the guy is good at that. He's got charisma. He's not like Robert De Niro or like Al Pacino, but he has a quality that when it shines through, even, you know, I mean, obviously he's a good looking man, but even like guys would be like, are like, hey man, like I get where you're coming from. You know what I mean?
I totally get that. And that was a great moment. And I also even liked the sort of weird vulnerable moment that he had with Supergirl, where he was like, listen, I don't want you to come because it freaks me out and I don't like being freaked out.
Yeah, I was like, wow,
that's okay. And yeah, I'm hoping, like, my biggest hope for this, because like there was a lot of sort of emotional heavy lifting, because honestly, the plot with the Dominators was like, wait, what's, huh?
Yeah, and that's this? What I was going to say, because when you say, like, great TV, to me, there is a lot of, like, a lot of the invasion stuff felt rushed, because quite honestly, Supergirl, and you're very smart. It's really interesting that you called that out, that they were like reintroducing characters or introducing characters or moving a storyline along. But at the same time, like if you hadn't watched Supergirl, you would pick up on that. I hadn't realized that until, you know, I just spoke to you now, because I saw a lot of people complaining like, oh, this is just an episode of Supergirl with the crossover thing like tacked on at the end. But now I get why they did that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that makes complete sense for them to do that.
They introduced the Luthers. They introduced like the Luther dynamic, Project Cadmus. All that was like kind of laid out, and like the whole Mon-El thing, all that. Yeah. I was actually really glad for that.
Yeah, and it's a good way to suck the people in and be like, you know, this is going to be what everyone watches, so let's give new fans a chance to tack on to this. You know what I mean? That's really interesting that you said that. Very smart.
Yep.
Yeah. But then, you know, obviously the crossover really begins in The Flash. And I felt like that the invasion was a little rushed. You didn't really get to know, like the aliens kind of just show up and then the heroes like run into battle and then the mines get taken over. And I was like, with about like what, not necessarily 4 hours, you know, maybe like 3.5 hours of TV time, there should be more sort of like breathing room for this thing to develop over time, the aliens be a bigger, scarier threat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the resolution sort of like tie up in a less kind of, you know, hokey way, you know?
Right.
But for what they did and what it was in four different programs, which I'm sure is a nightmare to coordinate. I mean,
oh my God,
the long and short of it is that it was fun. Like I had fun, you know, I laughed, you know, my kid laughed, my kid loved it. He was jumping up and down on the couch, was like, can I start watching The Flash? And I was like, I don't know. That might be a little too adult for you. I think
Flash is okay. I mean,
maybe there's this a lot season, of killing they, and this, murder of parents and stuff like
this
that.
This season got a lot darker, has been like a lot darker than The Flash has been so far.
Yeah.
But even with that, like, and then what I mean by great TV is all that. Is that, like, I mean, it's not like, oh my God, my world has changed and I see life in a different way.
Yeah,
but it was entertaining. I laughed. I really enjoyed it. But I also, like, while the, like I said, while the Dominators, because, yeah, I feel the same way, that I wish to a certain degree that they had spent sort of more time and energy building up to the Dominators through all the shows throughout the season, as opposed to just basically dropping them off all of a sudden.
Good point. Yeah.
You know, but I can also see why they didn't. So that part left me a little less interested, but I was so engaged in certainly Cisco and Flash's relationship and how like they repaired that one. And that like how that like developed, the whole thing with Martin Nazarta. I was like so engaged in that emotional stuff that I didn't care so much about the like Dominators being weird. And I really liked that each episode did really keep the flavor of that series, that like the Flash episode is still a Flash episode, the Arrow episode is still an Arrow episode, and the Legends of Tomorrow episode, where they had to do all the heavy lifting of the plot, it was still just batshit crazy and totally silly and mostly nonsensical, but so much fun that you don't care. That like, great, I'm watching a metal guy punch aliens. I don't care that this doesn't actually like, wait, what did they change in the future? Who's the guy with the glasses? No clue.
It's
don't care. I had fun.
Yeah. It's really funny because it's interesting how, you know, it's interesting what I gravitate towards, because it's like, if you were going to sort of like lay these out, like currently right now, like what, which ones are my favorites? It would be Supergirl, probably a tie between Flash and Legends of Tomorrow, and then Arrow would be last. But this episode of Arrow to me was kind of like the best one of the season, the best one in a long time, because it is that sort of thing where it's like, yeah, I love the action and I love the fighting and I love all that stuff. But I love sort of like scene work. I love character interaction. Yeah. I love when you sort of like introduce a character into a situation that they are like, I don't know what's going on. And just to see like all those characters sort of, and all, again, like you said, like it was like a big Arrow reunion where all these like old characters kept coming in and, you know, and were like, sort of like reintroducing themselves and in a way, like sort of reintroducing his like backstory, you know, to like maybe viewers that had never like seen it before or forgotten about it. It's really interesting because it could have been like a clip episode or something, but they avoided that whole thing, you know, completely. And it's just, I really do feel like that these shows sort of embrace that sort of like inner child that we had like growing up. Like if you're watching these, I run into so many people on Facebook that just take this stuff like entirely too seriously. And it's like, that was dumb. And this was, and I'm like, yeah, it's dumb, but have you ever gone back and read some of the comics that we read? They're pretty dumb. Like, you know, I mean, we had fun and, you know, I mean, obviously they were fun and some were smarter than others and some were more intelligent than others. But if you go back and you look at like the hardcore, like superhero stuff, it's kind of, some of it's kind of dopey.
It's pretty silly. Yeah.
You know, and that's fine because it's entertaining. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be Kierkegaard, you know what I mean? It's so,
exactly.
So there were definitely like so many things that I enjoyed, but it's interesting because you mentioned the comics before. One of the things that was a bit of a disappointment is that Supergirl has gone to all this trouble of introducing like a guy from Daxam. And the Daxamites were a big deal in the Invasion miniseries in the 80s. So you had like these characters that were the Dominators, and they were sort of like the more cerebral aliens that were sort of like planning the invasion and had the ships. And the Daxamites were sort of like these crazy sort of Kryptonian-like beings that were like the strike force, the ones that led the attack. So you had like hundreds. It's almost like, I don't know if you've ever read Kirkman's Invincible. It's like you had like hundreds of like these Daxamites invading Earth. And unfortunately, the thing that made them weak was lead. You know, so it's like this common substance. So it's like their kryptonite, which is
that's a really bad plan.
Yeah, it's a really bad. But, you know, Supergirl, the season, they go to all this trouble of like, oh, there's this guy from Daxam and he's Mon-El and, you know, and all this stuff. And then Invasion happens and it's like, oh, are there going to be more Daxamites? And just nothing. And I was, was kind of like one of my disappointments. It's like, why do you go to the trouble of bringing this character from Daxam, you know, introducing the mythology of this, whatever your new mythology is, and then just do nothing with it. You know what I mean? And that tends to be my frustration with these shows as much as, you know, my love of these shows, because when they do something like that's totally comic book nerdy, like Masked Dog or Mad Dog or whatever that character is, like, that's a deep cut, man. Like that character,
that is a deep cut.
Yeah, that character is like gone and forgotten, like for a long time. Like he's not been re-brought back. He has not had a resurgence, as far as I know. Like that character came and went and was done. You know what I mean? And to introduce that character, and then, you know, then they do something like, oh, okay, like bringing a Daxamite, and he's not a harbinger of anything, you know? So that tends to be my frustration with these shows too, is that they'll introduce like little Easter eggs and then it's like, oh, they're going to do something with that. And then they don't do anything, you know?
No. And they do. There's a lot of throwing things at the wall. There's a lot of like wrapping things up relatively quickly. And that's true, but I don't mind it so much. Like I'm hoping they have a larger plan for Mon-El. I am like, my years with DC superhero comics were so long, far back. I was still thinking Mon-El was her Kryptonian cousin.
Well,
Yeah,
that's probably the old mythology. I don't even know what's going on now in the comics. Yeah. I mean, Mon-El and Power Girl and all those like Kryptonians, their origins have changed like so many times over the years. So,
right.
As far as I know, Mon-El in the comics could be a Daxamite. I don't know.
I think he is. No, I looked it up, and yeah, he is now. They've retconned and re-retconned him from being Superboy's cousin to a Daxamite. At this point, because yeah, it's all a mess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they may bring it back, and that would be, hopefully they'll bring some of that back down the road, and we'll see. I'm still holding out, and hope maybe they'll do it next year to give us some sort of Crisis on Infinite Earths and combine these two universes.
Me too. Like, I was just
get it done with.
Yeah.
And that'll be fun.
I mean,
because they have to at some point.
I'm just dying for that. Like, I want them to have, like, you know, because that was part of the fun of it too, was like, obviously this Supergirl, I mean, Supergirl for me is like, it's an event at home. Like, I watch it with my daughter. I wait to watch it with her. We sit and we watch and we have fun. And, you know, there's a positive female protagonist. They've introduced this season a little bit more sex elements. Like, Mon-El's a little bit of a horn dog, and he got caught like trying to sleep with somebody on the office copier. And I was like, oh, come on, guys. Like, really? My kid is like watching, you know, Supergirl has become like a really favorite character of mine through this show. I mean, I've always kind of liked sort of Supergirl, especially like the part that she took in Crisis on Infinite Earths. But like, honestly, it was just so great because she comes to the new Earth and everyone's like, wait, aliens now? Like, from another planet, from another Earth? And then I just absolutely love the fight scene where they're all fighting her and she's just like, you know, okay. Like, you know, she's just like tearing them apart and they're trying to like re-strategize and, you know, and Oliver just doesn't know what to do. And it's just like, it's like really great stuff. She's like doing all this stuff with the smile on her face. And, you know.
Oh, that training sequence was amazing. It was just great. I was like, God, this, like, what must just be terrible.
Yeah. Oh, the bit with Mick when he meets Supergirl. Yeah. Well, when they I love the bit where they all like, oh, this is Supergirl. And they're all like, Supergirl? That's kind of like, like an egotistical name. And he's like, I'm not going to call you Supergirl. And, you know, and she's like, I'm going to call you Skirt. And it's like, really? And then like, what? Like 5 minutes later, he's being attacked by an alien. And he's like, Supergirl, come help me.
Yeah.
I mean, they were setting that up, but it was great to see.
It was great. I mean, anything involving Mick Rory is just the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Like, that character is so much fun and like is
really
always
is.
Just breath of fresh air. But we also have avoided one of the great Easter eggs of the whole thing. The Hall of Frickin' Justice.
Oh my God, yeah.
I was like,
I know, it showed up and I was like, and it was funny because like it showed up and my daughter, who also liked Super Friends cartoons when she was younger, she was like, the Hall of Justice. She's like, oh, and I was like, oh my God, you're a nerd like me. Like, it's like, but I love how they're like, oh yeah, what about this place? Yeah. And he kind of like brushes it. Like, it's kind of like secondhand dialogue. He's like, I don't know. It's kind of like a hangar, a hall or something.
Star Labs just had sitting around.
Yeah.
Like, that's brilliant.
It's just great. I mean, it's great because this show like takes all the chances that the DC movies like won't even, you know, it's like we've spoken about this before on the podcast, but it's like they can't fully embrace it because they can't do like everything, but they do enough so that when you're watching it, you're like, oh yeah. And it's like, it's great because you feel kind of special. It's like, that was for me, they remember me, you know what I mean? And it's very much like they learned a lot. When they started The Flash and like The Arrow took on its second season, I think that these producers really learned a lot by watching the Marvel movies. I think they really were like, dude, we've got to sort of, because I remember the first season of Arrow was like very like Smallville. It was like, oh, I love you and he loves me and where have you been on the boat, Oliver, and mwah, mwah, kiss, kiss. And then like somewhere through the halfway through the first season, I mean, I honestly, you know, with Arrow, I would tell people like, okay, watch the first episode and then skip to about episode 10 or 11 and you'll be okay. Right. You know what I mean? Because so much of that, but there was definitely a shift and it's just like they've really embraced that. I mean, Firestorm should have his own show. I mean, if there's a character or a pair of characters that would work great together, you know, like a superhero odd couple or something, like, I mean, it works on Legends of Tomorrow, but if they were ever to spin off like characters from that show into their own show, like Firestorm is just always joy to watch.
Yep. Firestorm would definitely be the one to spin off from there because he's great. I like one of the things that I also like, and one of the things that not so much that they've learned, but that is part of the same nature. Like, and I think we talked about this when we talked about Batman v Superman. And I know that I've mentioned it to various other people that part of what makes the Marvel movies work and part of what makes Civil War, which is, you know, basically the same as Batman v Superman work, is that it's the time and energy invested in these characters. And, you know, when this comes to its big finale, the big sort of – not the big finale, but the closing moments are Oliver and Barry sitting in a bar talking.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Right before it, it's Oliver and Dig and Barry and Sarah. And it's like we've been watching these characters for so long. They have history and it feels like a real history that it's just it's again, we're coming back to that idea of like family. It's like sitting with old friends and it's nice to see. And like it's we're invested in this.
Yeah.
And that's I don't know. That's just a huge part of it for me.
Yeah.
And a huge part of just like investing in these people. And in this world that they've built.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes me happy.
Yeah. I think what's really interesting is, you know, there's a lot to be said for all the special effects and stuff like that. And, you know, for TV, I really think that they do like a great job with all the fighting and, you know, the Flash in particular, like, you know, all that stuff. Supergirl, the flying. I mean, that's some of the best flying I've seen in like a movie or a TV show, you know, in a long time. But, you know, what it really matters is like, sort of like you said, like building up the relationships that they build up to each other and the chemistry that they have with each other. I mean, the chemistry reads they must have, or I don't know what they do on those sets, but there must be some sort of like team building exercises that they do, or there must be something going on with the cast, because it's like, you know, that first crossover with the Flash and Supergirl, it was like instantaneous. You were like, damn.
Yeah,
like my wife said it. My wife was like, if they're not dating, they should be, because it was just like, bam, it was like they connected. And I didn't know that they were like on Glee together, or I don't know if they were on together or whatever, but they were on that show for a little bit. Maybe they knew each other a little bit before that, but
yeah,
you certainly get, even like when somebody like Oliver's like being a hard ass, you certainly get that sort of, feel of like, connection. And, and like that we get each other, or that like, you know, it's like when you meet somebody for the first time and you're like, oh yeah, you and I are going to be friends. Like that's,
right.
they capture that like right away, you know? And even when there is, and that's part of the reason why I still like Arrow, even though that character can be sort of like a hard ass, there's definitely sort of like a soft core to him that comes through that really doesn't come through in a lot of modern iterations of Batman to me. You know what I mean? Because when you're reading a comic or you're seeing a movie, you only have 2 hours, or you're sort of just reading sort of what they give you and you're not getting sort of that actor's nuance. You know what I mean? And it probably has to do with Stephen Amell himself probably being like a decent guy in, you know, in real life. Yeah. You know what I mean? That comes through.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. But one of the things that I kind of wanted to bring up was the finale of the whole thing of Legends of Tomorrow. Yeah. I mean, it really, really did pull like an Independence Day. You know what I mean?
Where
that was sort of where it got like really, really ridiculous. And but at the same time, it's like that's the show where you get away with that sort of thing, you know, mm-hmm. where it's like, oh, we're going to plug this software into the ship and, oh, we're going to get on the alien ship. We're just going to escape and fly away and be able to pilot the ship immediately. And I was like, wow, exactly. This is some like, you know, this is some Independence Day nonsense, like right here. You know, this is where you sort of like roll your eyes and are like, you know, like the 14-year-old comic fan or whatever, you know, whatever, 18-year-old, 19, that would never happen because the alien technology, you know what I mean? The one thing that I have to call out is Steel's helmet. We got to change it. We got to change
that's
it. It looks like a pumpkin on his head. I mean, give him a helmet, but it looks like this big red, white, and blue pumpkin on his head with a mohawk. And I was like, that's unfortunate. Ooh, yeah. Because the outfit itself is okay, but like when he has the helmet on, I was just like, oh no, you know? And
I felt like it was just all unfortunate. Like,
oh,
just
no, really?
Too much.
I like
the too like spangly.
Oh, no, I'm with it. I'm down with it. You know, I'm a Captain America fan, so I'm down with the star spangled outfit. But when I saw him with the helmet on, I was like, ooh, man, come on. Somebody didn't.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that must have been a decision where it's like, we made it. You got to wear it. We'll fix it later. You know what I mean? But that's another thing, again, like going back with the effects, like Steel, like, or Commander Steel or whatever they're calling him on the show.
Yeah.
They've got a guy who turns to steel. How long did it take the X-Men movies with budgets of like hundreds of millions of dollars to give us a guy who turns to steel and fights people, you know?
I know. They took them and they still haven't gotten it right. I mean, Deadpool's the only one that got it right.
Exactly.
Everything else that the X-Men movies have except for like 2 seconds in X2.
Yeah.
And even then, he wasn't Russian, so I was pretty pissed off about that. In X2. So, you know. Like, yeah, I know. They give us... It is that Marvel thing, because I feel like it's also, like, oddly, you know, that feeling of when the first Guardians of the Galaxy trailer came out, and everyone was like, Marvel is giving us a raccoon with a machine gun.
Yeah.
Right, standing on a tree. And DC can't give us, you know, a Superman with underpants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm with you. Like, it's so divinely insane. Like, everything about Legend of Tomorrow is just nuts. Everything they're doing. I love the show. I enjoy the crap out of it. It's just wildly insane.
Yeah, it really... Legends of Tomorrow has kind of become my favorite in a way because, like... You know, Arrow kind of takes itself too seriously sometimes. The Flash was sort of that balance. Like, the first season of The Flash, you can't beat it. Like, for me, out of all of them, out of all the shows, out of all of the, you know, the CW superhero shows or CBS, if you want to count Supergirl, the first season of The Flash was like perfection. It was like,
you nailed it.
Now, The Flash has not rebounded, in my opinion. I think it's really kind of, especially particularly this season, is a little kind of like all over the place. And I'm wondering if there's like too many writers being spread too thin over like 4 shows. But for me, the reason that I really... Once I realized what Legends of Tomorrow was, and I keep saying it on Facebook all the time, like Legends of Tomorrow is like your 14-year-old superhero role-playing game campaign, like come to life on the screen. Like, it's just like, how ridiculous is this? I swear to God, they've got to have like 5 14-year-olds in a closet somewhere, and they'll be like, just go ahead, play. Here's the old Marvel superheroes role-playing game. Go ahead, have at it. And they sit and they record it. you know, and these are the characters you can use, and they sit, which must be like the best job ever. I swear to God, this must be happening, because as soon as I saw like the giant robot, like in the first season, I was like, oh my God, giant robot. You know what I mean?
Yep. So,
you know,
Adam got big. The only time the Adam got big, yeah, it was like, it's all like, just throw things at the wall. Like if there's anything that I get frustrated with The Legend of Tomorrow, it is the like wild inconsistency about their relationship to time travel and what they're doing. And I mean, there is also with all these shows, there is a little bit of like weird character amnesia, because, you know, they made a point, one of the, because, you know, the whole issue is the Flashpoint and it changed everything. And even White Canary was all like, you think I want to bring my sister back? And I'm like, wait, didn't you just spend the entire first half of this season, there were like three episodes about you trying to kill Damian Dark in the past so that he doesn't kill your sister.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe just slow your roll there a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And just also if there's anything, it's that. It's that like weird inconsistency of how we're supposed to feel about things. But it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
And they don't care about the inconsistencies. They're not like trying to make it serious. And yeah, you're right. It's just pure comic book lunacy. You're like, okay, great.
Yeah. I mean, Legends of Tomorrow.
Doctor Who.
Yeah. You nailed it. I was just going to say it. Doctor Who. I mean, Legends of Tomorrow to me is like Doctor Who with superheroes. It's like, I mean, Doctor Who makes a little more sense, is definitely more consistent, and is definitely sort of like pulled together. But I think like with Legends of Tomorrow, the greatest thing is like, you've got like all these crazy characters and there's so much to do with them, and they're all in costumes, you know? And the thing is like, once I realized like what it was, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like I get it now. Like I get it. Like if I don't have time to play role-playing games right now, I have time to watch this show and I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? And I'm going and I'm going to laugh. I'm going to laugh like I do when, you know, somebody in, you know, I mean, I do still engage in that every once in a while. Like when somebody rolls like a two and misses a, you know, a really critical shot that they need to save somebody. And it's like, oops, sorry, that didn't work. You know, it really embraces that wonderful feeling that you had, where you were either trying to create your own comic books and they were just outlandishly crazy, and you would make up your own like superhero names and do stupid stuff, which I still do, you know, in a way, in my own time, you know. So it just it embraces that flavor. So where like Arrow really is trying to sort of dive deep into that dark sort of Batman place, the Flash and Supergirl sort of maintain the, you know, balance of like, okay, we're going to be a little silly, but not too silly. And Legends of Tomorrow is like the complete flip side. It's like, we're going to go crazy. Get ready. Cause here it comes, you know? And anytime they go crazy, it's like, I'm like, wow, they did that. Like somebody on TV did that. Like, it's just great.
They have Commander freaking Steel. I mean, their lead character is freaking Firestorm every week.
Yeah.
On television.
Yeah. Exactly.
Firestorm.
Yeah.
It's so awesome.
Did you ever think you would see Firestorm? With the flaming head too. Like that's the thing that
kills him. Head and everything.
I remember when they introduced him with the what's his face? Stephen Amell's cousin. Like they were trying to do that.
Yep.
And then he kind of didn't have the flaming head for a sec. And I was like, no, you have to have the flaming
He's
head.
Have the flaming head, head that's or the nothing. Whole point.
And now he does. And it's like, it's so incredibly just like, it's really weird to get like a sense of gratification from that. Like that matters to you. Like you almost flash. And I think it comes from like us having lived through times where like superhero movies, like they were garbage. Like so many of them were just terrible, you know,
just total trash. And mostly they also spend a lot of time apologizing for being superhero.
Yeah, exactly.
And pretending that they weren't.
Exactly.
And it was frustrating. It was frustrating as a fan. So yeah, it's totally the vindication of all of that. Of like, yeah, this is a Supergirl show.
Yeah.
She is freaking Supergirl with the Martian Manhunter.
Yes.
Is again also on television every week. The goddamn Martian Manhunter.
Yeah. I remember when he showed up on season one, and I was like, did they just sneak a Martian Manhunter show onto TV? Like, did they just do that? Like, and he works. Like, he shows up, and they do such a decent job with the effects that you're like, oh, this, it works. Like, they made it work. And it's like, and you accept it. And it also just like the great thing about these shows is like if you're not like a complete and total cynic, like it just it removes that cynicism from you. Like,
oh my God, you
know,
yeah.
I mean, in a way, if like you sit down and enjoy it. I mean, I know that there are plenty of people who comic fans that I come into contact and they're just like, oh, geez, really? This is so dumb. And I'm like, well, you're watching it. Like, you're still watching it. I'm watching it. And there's something about it that just kind of like sucks you in and removes that like that cynicism in a way, at least to me, because I'll watch them and I'll pick them apart. I'll be like, this is dumb. Wow, that's dumb. Or, you know, I mean, I think I posted on Facebook, particularly about Arrow. I was like, wow, this show is dumb, you know, but at the same time, I enjoy it. Like there's a dude in a masked dog or mad dog outfit with the
wild dog.
Wild dog. That's what I keep. That's how forgettable he is. I can't remember his name, but I mean, he's got a hockey mask and he's walking around, and you know what I mean. And it's just great. I mean, I can't. I'm so enthusiastic about these shows. You know.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I feel exactly the same way. And, like, each one does something a little slightly different. You know, Supergirl is much more, and it's a shame because sometimes I know I have a friend who really hates Supergirl. God, he hates Supergirl.
Really?
And, so yeah, some of his complaints are legit because he compares it to that SNL skit about the Black Widow movie. That they had a couple years ago where it was like a super cheesy romantic comedy. Uh-huh. And Supergirl is obviously far more of a kissing show.
Sure.
Than the other ones. Though like not Arrow, but no, Flash especially is
Arrow
full of
Flash.
Like,
yeah. No, I don't
teen,
think
Flash is so full of teen angst.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you know, the whole, as much, and it was deeply affecting to me for a lot of reasons, but still, the whole idea that, like, Cisco is mad at Barry, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
That he's just sort of mad at him is, like, such CW teen superhero nonsense.
Yeah.
What do they call it on Supernatural? Boy melodrama.
But, and that's the thing though, again, it's like anybody who has that complaint. I mean, again, I know somebody that hated the Flash, hates the first season, and they're always going on about, oh, the romance stuff. Why do we have to have that? I'm like, dude, have you ever read an issue of Spider-Man? Like, ever?
Oh, my
have
God.
You ever read an issue? Like, and these are people who are like, oh, I love the John Romita Spider-Man. I love that. I'm like, did you ever read an issue of it? Because, like, every other page, she's like, Gwen Stacy, Mary Jane, blah, blah, blah. Did you ever read an issue of Superman? Did you ever read an issue of, like, so many superhero characters? It's like, it's all there. So when people are like, oh, this is like a kissy show with the romance, I'm like, you're just pissed off because it's like live action and it's sort of like happening and you can't just sort of like gloss over it, you know, and you're not a teenage boy anymore with those teenage feelings of loneliness. Like, why won't girls look at me? You know what I mean? It's like you're not identifying with that anymore. So that's the thing is like, look, I hate to break it to you out there in whatever podcast land, but they were soap operas, you know, they were all soap operas and we ate it up like a spoon and it just wasn't called Days of Our Lives, and they had people punching each other every like several pages and awesome art, you know? So anybody who's like, Supergirl is this, and that's the other thing too, is I find a lot of criticisms towards Supergirl to be A, sort of buried in this weird sexism in a way, and the other thing that I find is like, Supergirl not necessarily made for dudes. You know what I mean? I mean, it's more of a female empowerment show. So let it be that, because I don't know about you, but I didn't read a lot of Supergirl comics like back in the day until she died, like on Crisis of Infinite Earths. I kind of didn't really care about her all that much, you know, except for the fact that she was a Superman's cousin. So, you know, for, yeah. So it's, maybe it's not for you and maybe that's okay. But I remember when Supergirl debuted last year, there were so many people just like guys, adult men, like ready to hate on it. And I was like, maybe yeah. I just have a person in the house who's the audience for it. And it's because of that, that I can sit and watch and dig it. You know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, I may have been one of those people who's like, oh, this is dumb. Oh, whatever. But at the same time, I also feel that Supergirl is the thing that embraces most of the Superman, more of the Superman mythology than anything that's come in the past, like 10 to 15 years, you know?
That is also true. And it is also like, and Supergirl in and of itself is also charming. And you're exactly yeah. right that all of them, all of these shows are soap operas. And like we, it's all a lot of, not just kissing, but a lot of, you know, the let's talk yeah. about our feelings nonsense.
Yes.
Not that that's nonsense, because I like a good soap opera, and everyone likes absolutely. A good soap opera.
And Peter Parker loved well talking done. About his emotions, too.
He really did. He had a lot of emotional issues.
He did, yes.
So, again, I was just glad, like, so glad to see it, and so glad to see, like, those storylines, you know, Martin and his daughter. Though it still weirds me out, every time it comes up on this show, like I get it about Cisco's brother.
Yeah.
And certainly the reveal that Cisco, like, and that was a big part of it. The part of their emotional issue is that, you know, Barry changed the timeline
yeah.
for our listeners. Barry changed the timeline in Flashpoint. And when he came back, Cisco's brother had been killed by the new official timeline, Cisco's brother had been killed by a drunk driver.
Yeah. It was a car accident and, or something like that. Yeah.
In a car accident or whatever. And at first, Cisco was mad because he had been asking Barry to go back and save his brother. Yeah. And Barry refused. And there was like a weird, there were a couple sort of weird stutter steps with that where it was like he was mad that Barry wouldn't help his brother and instead helped his family, and he seemed to get over it. But then the reveal that, like, in the original timeline, before Barry fucked it all up, Cisco's brother was alive. I was like, yeah. That is powerful.
Yeah.
And that's, like, meaningful. But they also keep having this thing about Diggle having a daughter.
Yeah.
In the original timeline. Well, and now he has a son, and it's like, and Diggle keeps getting mad about that. I'm like, what?
Well, it's weird. I didn't read it as him being mad about that. Like, I read him as, like, when the reveal happened, like, he was confused because, quite honestly, if somebody showed up today to me and was like, I changed the timeline, you have a daughter now instead of a son, I would be like, okay. Like, I mean, this is what I've known all my life. I love who I have. You know, I'm not going to trade that. So, like, the Cisco thing and the Diggle thing, I think, are, like, very different. Like, the Martin Stein thing, I think, plays out differently because they're sort of, it seems like they're sort of insinuating that something happened to his wife, but now he has a daughter. And that is another really powerful thing because it's like, did you screw up? And it's interesting because I had sort of maybe not missed, but I'd sort of forgotten that bit where he was like, you got to go treat your, like, I thought that was part of the Flashpoint that
the daughter showed up.
And then it was like, oh no, it's because he did something. That's right. I forgot, you know?
Right. But I and this is just speculation on me. I think they're saving something bigger for that.
Yeah.
Because you're right that they keep being really, really, really shady about who his wife is.
Yeah.
Because they, like, I noticed it a lot in this one that they haven't been saying Clarissa. And I'm like,
Oh, you think he might have married somebody else?
I think he might have married someone else.
Oh, my goodness.
He hasn't found out yet that he's like never married Clarissa, that, you know, he did something that Clarissa is not his daughter's mother, at least.
Oh, wow. See, I was thinking that it was just that the wife died and the daughter survived.
No, because they made a point that her mother or his wife is still alive.
Oh, okay.
Because when he got there looking for her, she was like, oh, no, mom's busy.
Yeah.
But she keeps calling her mom and they haven't, like, shown her.
Oh, okay.
At all.
That's right.
In a while. Right. So I'm like, I don't know.
That's right.
That would be something. But yeah, it's, I get it more with Martin's side, because then it's like, here is this complete stranger to me who is supposed to ooze my daughter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a total mind fuck. But yeah, you had a son that you never met, didn't know existed, will never meet, is a less of a thing to be annoyed about.
Yeah, especially if you have already a sim. It's you not have, like,
yeah.
It would have been more powerful. It was like, you never had a kid. And then it would be like, right. Oh, my, like what? I actually, you know, we've been trying and whatever. And there's a reality out there where I have a kid. And now I don't, you know, like,
right. That's yeah.
What it would be. And quite honestly, to me, that would have kind of cleared up, because that's sort of the thing that's holding the Diggle story back, storyline, or oh as a God, character, yeah. The fact that he has a kid and he's like trying to, you know, I mean, like, come on, you're a mercenary. You know what I mean? I mean, I get yeah. It. And, but they don't, they sort of ignore that aspect of his life so much that it becomes ridiculous. Like when he goes back to it, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Like yeah, when they brought up, he missed his kid's birthday party. He's really mad. And I was like, huh?
Yeah, it's like we didn't see your kid like at all for like five episodes. So, yeah. So like whenever they bring it back in, it's like, so to me, that would have been a really good opportunity to sort of like clean that up, retrofit yeah. The kid out of it, and then him have more of a reason to be angry. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
The other thing that I missed about this was not enough John Barrowman. John Barrowman
not
shows up.
Nearly enough John
he
Barrowman.
He needs to be all over that show, man. Like, what's going on, John yep. Barrowman? Like, he hasn't shown up that much at all this season on Arrow.
He hasn't shown up at all on Arrow. I can't yeah. even remember. I guess he's just off doing the league. So I keep hoping this Prometheus thing will somehow connect back to him that they're doing.
Yeah.
It's weird in a way. So I'm like, it better be someone interesting when we get the reveal.
Yeah. Oh, do you know why Arthur Darvill left Legends of Tomorrow? Like,
no clue.
I wonder if he got.
And I hear he's coming back.
Yeah, probably.
He's not. I've stayed away from too many spoilers, but I hear he is coming back. I don't know if permanently, but that he appears in future episodes of this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because I like him as an actor, but for some reason as Rip Hunter last season, he just didn't really have the gravitas to pull it off.
No.
But in the beginning of the season, I was like, oh, wow, he's leaving? Like, he's only staying on one season? So I just thought that was really weird.
I feel like their plan with Legend of Tomorrow has often been like, it's somehow limited. And we're like, almost an anthology series. And also like, they expect at some point they're just going to stop making them. Uh-huh. And with like, kind of without ceremony, they'll just be, it's not like, oh my, it won't be a like, we're canceling it. It'll just be like, okay, Legend of Tomorrow has run its sort of course.
Oh,
because we're supposed to also get, we were also supposed to get Wentworth Miller back at some point as well.
He shows up this week.
Oh, he does.
Yeah,
okay,
on
good.
The winter finale. I mean, yeah, the winter season finale. Yeah, he's showing up this week for a bit. So, yeah.
I thought we were going to get him back out of Flashpoint. I thought with Flashpoint we were even going to get Citizen Cold. But we didn't. So I was really bummed about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, to talk about Flashpoint just for a little bit. I mean, I honestly, this is the problem with the Flash TV show. I feel like the finales like set up these like giant moments or these giant mm-hmm. events, and then they just kind of like, you know,
yep.
Flashpoint should have been huge. I mean, Flashpoint could have been the opportunity to reach across all the shows and like just
yeah.
go crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I guess that's a big risk because you've got people who may want to come in and not know what's going on or whatever. But like, I also just feel like on the Flash itself, it wasn't that big of a thunderous.
It wasn't that big a deal.
Yeah. It just, yeah. It was kind of like, I changed it. It kind of changed a little bit. Like this
yep.
person's it, but it wasn't like, I mean, I know that we've got Killer Frost now and you know, but at the same time,
it's
just not enough. The world isn't enough. It's not like what happened like in the comics, and the comics is like a giant shift, but wouldn't it have been interesting for the first couple episodes of Arrow, Supergirl, whatever, you know, something, or Supergirl, I mean, that's the perfect opportunity to merge the worlds, right? And they
I know, that would have made me, I would have made me so happy for them to do at least just one episode of Legends of Tomorrow and Arrow in Flashpoint.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that would have really, I would have been really happy to see that, and I'm still bummed that they never did.
Yeah, yeah.
So bummed. Yeah. Oh my god.
I wonder if
that's not Barry under Savitar. I'm gonna be pissed.
Oh, really? You think it's gonna be Barry?
It's gotta be some alternate version of Barry. Like, come on.
Really?
Who else is it gonna be?
I'm still kind of disappointed that the dad wasn't the original Flash from the original TV show. You know what I mean? I was like, they kind of set that up a little bit, like when he jumps through like a time hole or a wormhole and you see it for like a second. And I was like, oh my God, wouldn't that have been awesome? Like if his dad was like, you know, in another world, the Flash, you know, in that outfit. But, you know, they kind of just dropped.
But no.
I'm sure it has to do with rights or something or permission.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of, like, all these nerd fantasies we have are, you know, because I keep wondering, like, wow, how many salaries are they paying? Like, how much does it cost to have this guy come on this show and then this guy come on this show? I mean, it must be prohibitive, you know, so.
I mean, the logic, and also the logic, like, just to, like, geek out as a TV writer, like, the logical and physical and writing challenge of creating this four-show crossover and how it was written. I don't know how they wrote it. I don't know how I don't know how you build that. I mean, obviously, you know, the Berlandiverse has a solid stable of writers who are at this point pretty well-versed in all the characters, and I'm sure they could bring people in and out, but all of the writing was so on point and so good for character and yet also still so good for the shows. I was like, I don't know how much this cost you. Like
this must have
cost so much money and effort.
Yeah. Well, it does seem like a lot of TV are becoming like they're getting the budgets of like mini movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And from what I hear, a lot of these shows are like really expensive. I mean, even the Netflix stuff is like crazy expensive.
Super expensive.
So, I mean, I guess that's the new, you know, I mean, because honestly, I was talking to somebody at work about it and I was like, you know, I don't really get that excited for like movies anymore. I mean, it's probably just because it's harder for me to get out. I mean, there's movies that I want to see, like I want to see Moonlight and I want to see like, there's a bunch, you know, once the grown-up movies kind of start coming out. Even like event movies, like unless it's kind of like a Marvel movie or something that a Star Wars movie, like I'm not really like dying to see like something crazy new unless the trailer is absolutely amazing or unless somebody I know has seen it and been like, dude, you got to go see that. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. And it's right about the economics. I mean, there was an article in Deadline the other week that the DC television universe, and that includes Gotham, brings in something like $4 billion a year.
Yeah.
And it's you know, or like, or no, not 4 billion.
It was like in the past 4 years or something. Yeah.
And
I posted a question about that. Yeah.
That scale is insane. And they are mini movies and they are like doing the work of movies.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. And yeah, I'm with you that like, yeah, sure. Star Wars, obviously going to see it in the theater. I'm probably going to see it a couple, three times.
Yeah.
But beyond that, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Am I really going to go out and see Passengers? Maybe.
Yeah. I'm just,
if the reviews are stellar.
I tend to wait for my screeners to come in at the end of the year. And then that kind of decides what I get. But cool. Well, any final thoughts on the CW Invasion crossover? I feel like we've just been talking about the series as a whole, which is fine, as opposed to the actual crossover itself. But I mean, I had fun. I enjoyed it.
Me too. I enjoyed it. I mean, I hope that like, I do hope that that this bears fruit for the shows going forward, that like, it's not all of a sudden like this happened and we're just going to pretend it didn't. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was well done and just a lot of fun.
I would love to see, you know, because Arrow is sort of like the Batman stand-in. I would love to see a little bit more of that sort of like, I mean, they've played with it a little now that metahumans are showing up. Like, Diggle's always, like, kind of freaked out when there's a new metahuman. Yeah. But I really would love to see the vulnerability of, like, the Arrow character come through a bit more, where he's like, what's my place in the world? Because they had that really good dialogue with his sister where they're trying to convince her to leave the dream world. And she's why do they need us anymore? There's people who can fly and, you know, do all that. So I just think that would be really interesting to see Arrow be like, there's a Supergirl out there and she can like literally move mountains. Like, what am I doing here? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would love to see that play out. I doubt they're going to do it, but I mean, I would just love to see those like little moments of, it would be a really good arc for that character to be like,
It is part of what they are doing this season. I mean, we're getting to final thoughts, but part of the season, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I've liked this season, is the challenge from, you know, his new guys and all of that. And part of it is like, and it was set up this way since he's the mayor and all that, is how, what's the best way for Oliver to help his city? Yeah. And is being a vigilante really the best thing for Star City at this point?
Yeah.
And I like that question. And I like the way that they're sort of dealing with it.
And
hopefully, this will be part of it. That's what I mean. Is that like, I want this to reverberate through the rest of the shows.
Yeah. I hope
so.
Really,
hopefully
happens.
It will.
And I just want Supergirl to be in the same world as them, because I need that. I want Superman to show up and meet Arrow and Green Arrow, or Superman show up and meet the Flash or whatever. You know, there's just so much possibility. I mean, it could still happen, but you know, honestly, it's like, I wonder how long, I mean, could you ever see a Batman show up? I mean, they did Superman. Would Batman ever show up like on Arrow or on the Flash?
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, think about it. We thought we would never see, you know, Batman. Superman on Supergirl.
We thought we'd never see Superman. So they could. And they could, since I guess the general sense of the, like, the DC universe, or at least how it's, how the history has gone out, is that Batman predates Superman, right? Is like the official sort of timeline.
I don't think so. Like, where? On in the comics?
Yeah, well, that, like,
they've been playing with that lately, where it seems like Superman's almost inspired by Batman, which really pisses me off. But I mean,
that's really stupid.
Back in the day, it was always, you know, Superman came first and then Batman showed up, you know, even in the 80s. Yeah, even in the 80s, it was more like, you know, Superman showed up first. I mean, he was always the inspiration, but lately they're in the random DC comics that I've picked up every once in a while. It seems like Batman has almost been sort of like an inspiration for Superman's costume, you know, Superman donning the costume. And I think that's BS. I hate that, because I'm like, Superman was first. He's the one that inspires them all. Let's just leave it at that. You know what I mean? So,
I don't like the inspiration idea, but I like the idea that, like, Batman was around first. I don't know why. I've always liked that idea that Batman was there first, and then had to deal with that there was Superman, and he had, you know, questions about whatever. So who knows?
Well, the idea
they
that
can
I've,
figure out a way.
The idea that I've always liked is that Clark was kind of acting in secret until he gets outed by accident, you know, by his own selflessness, and then that's when he decides he has to much like the Burn Man of Steel, you know, miniseries that
I love that version.
An episode of Arrow where Arrow is the hard ass and he meets the sort of James Bond Batman, you know, who is you know, a bit of a hard ass, but he is more debonair, more refined, more of a detective. You know what I'm saying?
That would be great.
That would be awesome. I mean,
That's what I want to see.
And that's the Batman that I want to see. I'm so tired of the Batman with a lump of cold stuffed up his ass. I'm so tired of that. I want to see this, because I think it was Grant Morrison. Like, he was being interviewed by Kevin Smith, and he said, like, they did this whole interview, I think, on Fat Man on Batman, Kevin Smith's podcast. And he kind of made me realize, like, why Batman was cool at one point. And he's like, Batman's like the James Bond. Like, he travels the world. He fights crime. He fights crime in Gotham. He's got all the gadgets. And he's like debonair, millionaire in the tuxedo. And I was like, yeah, that's the Batman I want to see.
Yeah.
Not the dude who just keeps yelling at his kids all the time.
With the Frank Miller Batman for, 30 years now. Enough. And it's definitely time for that to change.
Yeah, the Neil Adams.
I am done with that Batman entirely.
All right, cool. So we both love the CW shows. I mean, they're a little silly at times, and I can definitely grind my teeth where I'm like, oh, come on, really? But I mean, we loved them. I enjoyed the crossover. I hope they do another one. It'd be great to do another one like this second half of the season and just do that Crisis of Infinite Earths thing where like Supergirl becomes part of their world. It would be awesome. But
so great.
It is so great. But great. So this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. I'm Christian Horn. I've been on the line with my friend Jay Holtham. And we have been talking about the DCCW Invasion crossover event. Join us next week for another episode. And in the meantime, you can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that great stuff. Drop us an email if you ever have a comment or question. And thanks for listening. Hopefully we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.